Welcome to the Nourish Wrap Podcast, hosted by two passionate clinical nutritionists whose mission is to educate, inspire, and empower people to lead a more nourishing life. Katie and Jessica value evidence-based practice, holistic healing approaches, and practical health advice, all while having fun along the way. We thank you for tuning in and hope you enjoy the show.
Hi everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Nourish Wrap.
Yes, we're here today talking about emotional eating, and we really, really wanted to highlight this topic and bring a lot of awareness around it because Katie and I see this as a major barrier to people's reaching their health goals. Hey,
yeah. So we don't want to necessarily promote a perfect lifestyle, and we're not talking about. You know, we want people to be able to feel like they can, you know, have a bit of relaxation through their diet. But what we're talking specifically about is when we come across clients who they're just going for food, or they're going for alcohol, or they're going for chocolate, not because they're making a conscious decision that, hey, I might have a piece of cake today, just because it's like something happens, some kind of stressful event, and then they're going to food or something or drink, and it's just destructive.
Yeah, it's almost like just an automatic trigger, but it's definitely something we see in clinic a lot, and we just want to bring some awareness around it. So we've actually got special guest Rachel here, which
from Rachel Wilkinson Counseling.
She's gonna help kind of break it down for us even further, so it'll be a really good podcast. So I guess, where should we start?
Rachel, you come across clients like this in your own practice? Do you see this as an issue?
Yes, I do, and it was interesting that some of the two of the words you both used, Jess used the word conscious, and I think, or Katie used the word conscious, and I think sometimes you do things unconsciously and you're not even aware of the repercussions that they might have. The other word that was used was comfort, and I think that, you know, in our childhood and when we're small people, we often go to our parents for comfort because they kind of regulate our nervous systems if we're in a panic or if something frightens us or we're in a stressful situation. And I think as we grow older, if you don't have enough support around you, then you are going to something else for comfort, whether it's food, alcohol, substances, any other thing external. It is about comfort. And if I haven't got a friend that I can call and say, hey, I've had a really horrible day at work today, or something happened with my kids or my partner, you're going to go to something external.
That's actually a really interesting point, because when you were saying all of that stuff, one thing that I was thinking is that a lot of people actually probably don't have actually, like, decent friends that they can call now for comfort, because I feel like we live in this society now where everybody's trying to keep up with everyone else. And, you know, I mean, not everybody, but some people may not actually feel that they have genuine friendships,
or they may feel judged
or may feel like, oh, I couldn't do that because they have this perfect life.
Right, or the world's changed so much that we do move away. In, you know, ancient times we all lived in a tight community, but as the world has changed, we've all moved away from our families. So the families are usually the people that will love you unconditionally without judgment. So you might be able to, if you go, a friend of mine lives close to her mum and has coffee with her once a week, and I think that's really helpful for therapy. And if you haven't got family anymore, and everyone's on social media and you're not really connecting, the only way for me to emotionally regulate is to connect, and to connect with my partner, my kids, my family and friends. And if we're not doing that and we're sitting on social media and we're just watching everyone else and feeling like our life isn't on par with them or even close, then I think that's where the disconnect happens.
And even maybe when people are working, you know, overworking in jobs where they're like at work 70 hours a week or whatever, and that's like their life, do you think that's...
And there's no time.
Yeah, there's no time for anything else. There's no time to properly connect with your other half or properly connect with... I don't know, an exercise group or some friends or whatever.
Right. So then you choose disconnect, which is mindlessness, which is, you know, when people are talking about mindfulness, the opposite is, how do I unplug? How do I not think anymore about how unhappy I am with my life, my work, my family, my partner? How do I turn off? And one way is eating, putting anything unconsciously down our throats to just push the emotion down to make us feel less empty.
Mm-hmm. And especially the types of food that's being chosen is not necessarily good for you. Is it like, you know, chocolate, cakes, biscuits, things like that? So it's giving that that quick fix of, you know, feeling good and feeling satisfied, hey, and then often then it turns into guilt and everything like that. So it's a vicious circle. But the disconnect, yeah, that is really big, isn't it? And especially with this social media, you'd think, oh, we're so much more connected, but we're not really.
Right.
I'm totally unconnected. Yeah.
Because I have 500 people on Facebook, but I don't have one that I can call to say, this has happened.
Yeah. And you said something really interesting off air, Jess. You talked about, you know, one of the big, perhaps one way to help with emotional eating is looking at your life and working out whether you're actually living in alignment with your own values. Mm. Yeah.
And whether you've got people in your life that love you unconditionally. So no matter what size you are, what state of happiness or depression you're in, and, you know, do you have enough support and people to be around you when you're feeling miserable?
Mm. Yeah.
And with the alignment, I think, I know from personal experiences, this is why I brought it up to chat about, because when you're not living on purpose or in alignment, you often feel unhappy within yourself. Yeah. Like, wouldn't you agree? And I think as soon as you feel unhappy, that is like such a vulnerability there to turn to things like food.
Yes. Can you expand on that a little bit more, Jess? When you say not living in alignment, can you explain what that means for people who may not know?
So I suppose it just means working out kind of what makes you happy, and Rachel probably can elaborate even more here, but for me, the way I understand is, working out kind of what makes you happy and what do you value in life, what's important to you, and then living in line with that.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I can see that you're going straight. My I don't know if it's alignment to me or it's more of a circle for me, but it's the same theory. That is everything in my life supporting me enough? Is my social circle wide enough or connected enough? Is my health good? Am I happy in my workplace? What's going on in my relationship? So for me, it's a holistic, but I can see how, it's an alignment. And when you step out of the alignment, so maybe your work starts falling apart or you're feeling stressed or there might be restructuring, when one of those pieces falls away, that's when you can turn to. I think it's almost like unfulfillment and fulfillment. If I'm not feeling fulfilled, I'll fill myself up with something. That's that's the way it feels.
But if you were like in a job or something that was totally against your values and didn't give you, like, let's say, let's say you valued, I don't know, spending time with your husband or something, and you were working a 70-hour job for people that you didn't really like, well, you're going to feel pretty
resentful.
Angry.
And that value's not going to be filled. Yeah.
So you're probably going to turn to other stuff to try to top it up, I guess. Mm. Yeah?
I guess, like on a basic level, that's my understanding of it is. And, you know, and I guess I see it a lot in you know, this whole people pleasing or saying yes to things you really want to say no to, like, and then say, like, going somewhere because everyone else is doing it, but you actually really don't want to. You walk away from the situation, you feel like crap, and then boom, because, you know, you didn't stay true to what you really wanted to do, you're vulnerable then, I guess, to that comfort eating and that emotional eating.
Yeah, and I wonder if that, I don't know if that's age or it's people pleasing, but when I was growing up, yes, I'd go along with the crowd so that people would like me, and it's, you realize that it's people pleasing behavior because you want to be part of a group, but there's a real strength in standing alone and saying, no, thanks, that's not for me.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I think it's about your truth.
Yeah.
What's true to you. So that's the same as alignment.
Yeah.
So this is pretty heavy stuff. And like, let's say if somebody was totally listening to this going, wow, I have not even thought about my values and I don't even know what that means. And oh my gosh, living in line with it probably, like, it's a big thing to change your whole life, right? It's not going to happen overnight, but maybe we could like, so if somebody is aware that they are, you know, emotionally eating, or stress is a major trigger for making bad decisions like eating 3 packets of Tim Tams, what are some really basic strategies that we can look at that might help that? Like,
oh, you're looking at me now. Okay, I'm just finishing my coffee.
Without changing your whole life because your value system's wrong.
Yeah.
I guess it is. It is coping mechanisms. Mm-hmm. It is coping strategies, and it is, there are things that you can find that aren't in substances that make you feel just as good.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're talking about, we're chasing a good feeling, so we're eating the Tim Tams, so we're getting endorphins, so you can exercise. Mm-hmm. If you don't feel like exercising, lie down and meditate.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't feel like that, ring a friend, connect.
Yeah.
There's quite a few things. If there's lots of anxiety, you can look at emotional freedom technique or tapping. You can breathe. So I guess depending on how you've been brought up or who you've been around in your life, sometimes you don't learn these things.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you can only come to them as an adult through reading or exposure or just, I guess it's consciousness then. Mm-hmm. So there are many other ways for you to get endorphins. You can even just go outside. Mm-hmm. So
what about like hobbies and stuff, like so that
sure.
somebody gets some joy in their life?
Yesterday I potted plants. I don't pot plants ever, but
it
was driving me crazy. And I went outside and I was like, I have to fix this plant's dying, and it gave me such a sense of satisfaction. I'm like, oh, I feel so good now. I've done something. And producing something and being creative. Some people might write or draw, but you can get into the same kind of, the neurons are firing at exactly the same way.
Yeah.
And you're not feeling guilty about, you don't have to feel guilty about it afterwards.
Because if you were like, I'm just thinking about, if you're in a really high pressure job and you're working a lot and you're like literally coming home like fairly late, exhausted, going to bed, waking up, going to work again, you got to find, there's got to be, of course you're going to go to food because it's the easiest thing to give
absolutely.
You a rush.
Yeah.
But if you can at least find some space in your life for some kind of hobby or something else that brings you a remote amount of joy, that's got to help.
Yeah.
I mean, long term, that lifestyle's not healthy.
No,
but.
Yeah.
But even patting a dog, patting a cat, something to reset your neurotransmitters if they're going really, really fast and you're really stressed and anxious, just even stopping and breathing, drinking water, having a cup of tea. There are other ways where you can kind of reset.
Mm. Mm. And that's not always easy in the beginning, right? Like, you know, we say, yeah, just make the swaps. But it's habit forming, right?
Yeah.
There's that element.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and if you're in a habit of coming home really stressed, sinking a bottle of wine to calm me down to go to bed, you've got to think of ways to break that habit.
Yeah.
Okay, so what? Maybe I'm really thirsty, or maybe I'm really dehydrated because I've worked really hard today. How about I have 2 glasses of water, then 1 glass of wine, just switching it up a little bit.
Yeah, or drink some soda water, or find a different beverage at least that might be still enjoyable.
And making sure you're consistent with it, hey, because that's what's going to bring the long-term change.
So that's about changing a habit. And I know that there's a theory that it takes 21 days, but it actually can take 12 weeks. That's why all the gyms do the 12-week programs to get results. So it's a 90-day. It's about 3 months.
Wow.
Yes.
Sounds like your book, Rachel.
It's 90 days. And it's accepting uncomfortable. That's the one thing where people jump into self-sabotage because they're like, God, this is too hard. Or this makes me really cranky. Of course it does, because you've been used to pushing down all your emotions with other things. So once it comes up, and then you've either got to go to therapy or talk to people or work through.
Yeah.
you know, life sometimes does get hard and it's not supposed to be happy and fantastic all the time. So I think that's where people get stuck in that happiness trap of thinking they have to be bubbly and happy and great all the time. So they'll push it all down because trauma and stress and emotion is sometimes hard to face.
That's actually really interesting. That probably leads into really nicely pushing stuff down as far as emotions and stress and that kind of thing. And, you know, the energy of the cells receiving that emotion. This is getting a little bit like...
this is the good fun stuff.
This is more in that kind of energetic medicine side of things.
Yeah.
But we were talking about weight loss. For some people, the idea of, especially people who are quite big, the idea of losing weight can be really confronting. And, you know, and Rachel, you were saying before we went on air about, we were talking about, like, you know, there's a lot of stuff tied up in weight. Losing weight, is that, stuff's going to come up, isn't
it? Yeah, it makes you vulnerable.
Yeah.
Because people choose to hide behind clothes, behind occupations, behind kind of personalities as well, and you can also hide behind layers of eating, I suppose, if you don't want to be seen. Sometimes it's a way to protect yourself from the world and from the harsh realities that life isn't always fantastic.
And when I think we've kind of gotten to this place when it comes to significant weight loss, like people who have, you know, they might be carrying, you know, 40, 50, 60 kilos. We have, I think this biggest loser mentality is really destroying people because, you know, things like the biggest loser seem to, it's like they've made society believe that, oh, it should be really easy, you know, people just need to lose weight and that's it. But it is emotion, an emotional and a mental journey as well, isn't it?
Yeah, you see those guys breaking down and crying and remembering things in their childhood because that's when they become vulnerable.
Yeah,
and that's what you have to process, that stuff.
Yeah, so is it about then accepting that going on that journey or, you know, trying to overcome these emotional eating barriers is about accepting that it's not going to feel nice or
it's going to be hard.
Yeah.
But then there's also going to be the joy of reaching goals and there's going to be the joy of, you know, not carrying around the guilt associated and the stress and anxiety with, oh, God, now I've got to start again this diet because I've eaten so much. And then on a cellular level that your body hangs on to that fat because it's producing cortisol and it's getting stressed. So there's a balance both ways. There is a joy in reaching a goal and not feeling the guilt and being weighed down by the emotions associated with.
And that probably highlights the need to make, like, people should feel as though they can reach out and they might need multiple support mechanisms to support them on a really significant journey, not just a meal plan. Like, it's more than that.
So that's probably why Weight Watchers is effective, is that, you know, do they meet in groups or do they have a counsellor or a support?
Yeah.
It's almost like you do need a cheer squad.
That connection.
Or someone checking in with you every month or so. How's it going? How are you feeling? What's been happening for you?
Okay. Also, like, what about, I mean, one thing I sometimes talk to clients about, if I can see this pattern, because I often sort of go, like, what about, like, identifying the triggers? Because some people they haven't stopped to think.
Yeah.
Like, they just go, oh, I'm just going to have that Tim Tam. I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to have half a packet of Tim Tam.
Yeah, because I've just...
been good all week.
I've just phoned my mum and had a fight with her, so I've straight to the fridge. So it might be helpful. I don't know, Katie, if you're... clients keep a food journal or you know, be really interesting to see what emotions came up that day. So Monday I stuck to my plan, Tuesday I had a blowout because my boss shouted at me, or you know, what are the triggers coming up for you emotionally? And is it, what's the feeling associated with it? Am I feeling invalidated? Do I feel less than? Am I feeling judged? Am I feeling not accepted? Am I, you know, I don't feel like I'm good enough. A lot of those underlying emotions and feelings can be with us all our lives, but we don't realize until someone triggers it off. So you're kind of calming yourself and comfort eating. But, you know, when I think of comfort eating, I think of nourishment and I think of, you know, home cooking and all the beautiful things you can do that would be comforting that can be healthy too.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess we are definitely talking about it from a sabotaging way.
Hey? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I wonder if we're time poor.
Exactly. I think we are.
Yeah.
And you've had a big day at work, you've had a big fight with somebody, you go home and there's a chocolate chip biscuit and it's done and it's ready and it's going to give you a sugar hit.
Yeah.
So what can you, how can you prepare to fight that? What can you have already in your fridge, like the little bliss balls or something that how can you prepare for the inevitable?
But then even then that's a good point to bring up, because I've seen clients oh, you know, this binge eating or emotional eating with healthy foods, you know, with the bliss balls, oh, it's healthy, I'm gonna eat more, like, do you know what I mean? Yeah, so I see it on both angles, but
that's like me going to the gym so I can have cake.
So it's kind of like I think, you know, what we're talking about is really getting to the underlying cause of why it's happening in the first place. Yeah.
So it's almost like you've got to identify the trigger, and then instead of trying to suppress the trigger with food or alcohol, actually you've got to deal with it. Yeah. So instead of making your boss yelling at you mean that you're a failure.
Right.
I don't know.
If you already felt, if you had enough self-talk and enough self-love that you understood that when someone yells at you, it's their stuff, not yours. When you're emotionally strong, you don't take on that energy of someone else as a criticism of you. You're just like, oh, wow, she's having a crap day. Someone's yelled at her, so she's yelling at me. This is not about me. But if you're emotionally fragile and there's other stuff going on in your life, someone else is picking on you somewhere, or someone's picked on you when you were growing up, or you're bullied at school, you know, there's, it's a trigger for unresolved issues. And yes, getting them out will make you a stronger person.
And that's where counselling support comes in.
Yeah.
Because you can't do that stuff on your own, really.
And I think the beauty of counselling and why people need to go to an external third party is that your friends will just want to make you feel good.
Yeah.
And your friends will say, why don't you quit your job? And then you go into another job and you meet the same personality that shouts at you. So it's almost like you need somebody that's not your friend to be able to talk through some big issues. Because friendships are supportive, but they're also enmeshed in what they get out of it.
Yeah.
And that they still want to stay your friend.
Yeah.
Whereas I don't have to be.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Jess, was there anything, were there any other things that you wanted to talk about that you're seeing in clients that you wanted to pick Rachel's brains about?
Well, I guess Rachel off air brought up a good point, and we haven't discussed it yet, is that resilience, like, because, you know, there's this thing like, oh, he or she's just got an addictive personality, or, you know, there's that excuse, but it's a little bit more than that, hey, like, it's learning to rebuild that resilience, or, if you know, because a lot of the time we don't learn that as kids, so
I guess,
if we can get a good understanding of
and that. And I think that's really a great thing that they're teaching emotional intelligence in schools and resilience, and there's another buzzword that they're throwing around is grit. Whereas maybe when we were told as kids, if something happens, suck it up, princess, or get over it, or boys don't cry, we weren't allowed to have emotions. So there's a whole generation of people that are behaving in addictive ways and binge eating and comfort eating because we weren't allowed to have emotions. But now, I think, in answer to your question, which I have actually forgotten, I think it's about seeing your emotion and feeling it. So being resilient is about, if you're having a bad day, have a bad day.
Yeah.
Don't just pack it away somewhere and it'll come up the next time someone picks on you. It's really feeling into those emotions.
Yeah.
And also, don't go to somewhere else for comfort. Make yourself be comfortable with your own stuff.
Yeah.
It's all about you, and no one can process your stuff better than you. So it's almost go to yourself for comfort. Don't go externally, and value yourself. And it is about self-love.
Yeah.
And resilience is having enough emotional strength to deal with everyday situations. And I think in some instances, people have been regulated externally by their family. Okay, so calm down, it's all right, you know. But that's the self-talk that we need to have too, that we need to mentally be stronger to give ourselves some resilience. So if anything happens, we do the self-talk ourselves rather than run flying to someone else,
yeah,
or run flying to a substance or a cake or
yeah,
a...
Because that's exactly what's happening,
yeah. Yeah.
With emotional eating, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I like the way, Jess, you also said before, to look at things like cake, because cake is my favourite thing, in a celebratory yeah, way, so enjoy it.
Yeah.
And then on a cellular level, your body's response to that is perfectly normal and natural. But if you have a guilt cake, then your body... Is that right, Katie, that your body probably... treats it a little differently if there's some stress associated with it.
There's going to be stress around it.
Mm.
Theoretically, I guess, it will be different.
So your body hangs on to it and retains it.
And I mean, it could cause digestive upsets and all kinds of things if you're going to eat while you're stressed and you're anxious and punishing yourself. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So your body's response to that particular food is not going to be positive.
So I think that's actually a good place to come back to, because I think what we really want to get across from this podcast is that Jess and I in particular aren't suggesting that, you know, we should put an end to emotional and binge eating because you should never ever have chocolate cake or wine. It's just that it's really upsetting when we see in our clients that they're not making a conscious decision of, oh, gee, I feel great. I feel so energetic. I've been so good to my body. And I'm going to a birthday party today. And I'm going to have a piece of cake. And I'm going to enjoy it.
Yeah.
We're not talking about that type of decision making. We're talking about feeling as though, you know what, I don't even know why, but I just can't stop myself from eating a packet of Tim Tams and a bottle of red wine when I get home from work, you know, 3 times a week.
Yeah.
So addressing compulsive eating, which is related to emotional
absolutely. Because there's
issues,
you know, and Katie and I in clinic, there's only so much we can do, I guess, physically or, you know, balancing meals and things like that to try and support the biochemistry of the body, because then there's this thought pattern that keeps coming up
for these
people. Yeah.
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 Yeah. So that's really what we wanted to talk about today. We wanted to talk strategies around emotional unconscious decision making in response to a stress or a stimuli or something like that, and ways that we can change that response to try to help people who are dealing with those kinds of issues.
So having an understanding when something emotional comes up, address it, write it down, think about it, why is this happening, deal with it either with a third party or a friend, or look at the areas in your life that aren't fulfilled that makes you want to fill yourself up with something else.
Yeah, with a quick fix. Which, at the end of the day, I even had this conversation with a client this week, that quick fix might be enjoyable at the time, but literally 5 minutes after a block of chocolate has hit your system, you will feel like rubbish. You will feel really awful.
And that's only
awful because,
natural.
Yeah, because it's too much sugar, it's going to give you a big headache.
Yeah.
It's just awful.
And then that spirals, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because you feel depressed, and then you feel fat, and then you feel unworthy, and then you feel remorseful and guilty, and
you just keep doing it.
Yeah.
And angry, so I better have another one to make myself feel better.
Yeah. All right, guys, so hopefully that was helpful to some people, and I think the most important thing from this podcast to get out is that, you know, sometimes getting healthy or improving your diet or whatever it might be, it's not just about your food. It can be emotional, and sometimes, you know, counseling support and that kind of thing is just as important or even more important than working with somebody around your actual food and nutrition.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Rachel, did you have anything else that you wanted to say, or?
I guess what Katie just said, it is looking at from a holistic point of view, what areas of your life are not fulfilled? Which areas do you need to focus on, and how can you strengthen your emotional support systems, I think, through real people, not just social media, but real friends and family and pets.
Yeah, cool.
And plants.
And pot plants.
So I think we're all good to wrap up.
Yep.
So thank you so much for being on the show again, Rachel.
Thank you for having me.
It's awesome to have you, such good insight. And we're just going to finish up on our five values of the Nourished Rat, which is get a good night's sleep, move every day in an enjoyable way, eat whole foods most of the time, take a minute out of every day, and then always listen to your own body because everybody is different.
Thanks guys.
Thank you. Bye.